Hello, welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. It's Monday the 23rd of November 2009 and we're back after an amazing couple of weeks with 9/11 Truth exploding in Australasia. We've got a lot of news to cover you for you there, and we've got some really important breaking news in relation to the climate change debate coming up. And before I kick into the show, just want to welcome to the show tonight, Josh and John. Josh and John, are you guys there?
Yeah. Hey, yeah, I'm here.
Are you there, John?
G'day, Erwin. G'day, Josh. Yeah, I'm here again.
Excellent. John Bursell, of course, our primary representative of the Australian 9/11 Truth Movement, who's been travelling around Australia following the 9/11 Hard Evidence Conference. John has been really instrumental in making all that happen, and he's been to Brisbane, he's been to Melbourne, and he's been to New Zealand, and he's now back. John, amazing what's happened over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, congratulations, John, what you've pulled together there, and with the help of many, many volunteers, but, you know, wow.
It's actually absolutely been fantastic. I'm sort of a little bit speechless when I think about it. I've been moved to tears many times in the last few weeks just by the success we've had and the diligence, the relentlessness, commitment, the passion that people have for 9/11 Truth that fails to die after years of being ignored, humiliated, attacked. You know, we keep coming back and we're just punching harder every time. And this time around, wow, I mean, what a big ending in Wellington, New Zealand. Did you hear about the event in New Zealand?
Look, I've done a bit of reading about the event from one of the blogs. I think Claire Swinney, who's one of the organisers over there. And, tell us more from your end. I mean, I know that it was a sellout crowd at Wellington, and apparently you had to turn away over 100 people. And from what I heard, like, it was just... It was up to 1,000 people in the end who were trying to get in or trying to contact you.
Well, basically, as we saw at all the conferences in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane and Wellington, people were there hours before the event started, waiting to get in. Obviously at the Sydney event, we had a really strong crowd, the best crowd we'd ever seen. But as the tour moved through the week onto Wellington, the crowds were just getting stronger and stronger as the word was getting out. And in Wellington, after receiving numerous pieces of news, media and the mainstream reporting on the events, mostly all very good supportive articles, except for Kim Hill's attempt to attack Richard Gage with the ad hominem, basically. And
of course, Kim Hill being the presenter of a very prominent mainstream radio show on Radio New Zealand, I believe.
That's right, yeah, on the Saturday program there, she's... I suppose she's sort of a little bit legendary in the equivalent of the ABC in New Zealand. She's one of their main news journalists that does interviews with people. Obviously, she interviewed David Ray Griffin a couple of years back, which was quite a balanced interview, but she seemed to be on the attack this time. But anyway, it didn't matter. People heard the interview and were very, very interested. As we know from this last few weeks with the WSFM 101.7 FM in Sydney, that this issue is one degree of separation from everything. It's out there in the mainstream, in the grassroots population. People are really awake to this issue now. As soon as we actually let them know that something's on, you know, they're queuing up down the street. And in the case of the Wellington event, we had it oversubscribed before an hour before the event. There was too many people to fill the venue. Even though before the mainstream reports went out, we'd only had about 180 people reserve seats. But then once we got those articles out, Helen Waddington, who was the primary organiser, who I got to know through Evelyn, who came out from New Zealand to the Truth Now Tour Conference in Sydney, her phone was running off the hook you know, for a few days there was people queuing up for interviews with Gage. There was actually even TV interviews done on Sunday and during this week. You know, and once the word got out, we had, you know, like you said, there was getting up towards 1,000 people that wanted to attend the event in the end. And, you know, we ended up getting the information out to 620, 300 in the main hall in the Soundings Theatre, and another 320 in a breakout room that the staff, just as we had, remember the Powerhouse Museum we'd booked for our first event, and it got shut down. We found the staff were extremely helpful. I mean, the government location like this sort of theatre, which is what the Soundings Theatre at the Te Papa Museum is. It's the same sort of deal as the Powerhouse Museum. It's a government organisation. They actually put audio-visual systems in to be able to broadcast to another room when they realised how big the crowd was going to be. They did that at the last minute, and they helped with extra security. They were just absolutely fantastic. And then the 114 people we turned away that tried to get in the first hour or so, we all gave them a free copy of Blueprint for Truth. So you can imagine that the waves created from that event are going to be massive.
Look, John, that's a massive amount of materials you've given out. Did you actually have enough DVDs to go around?
Well, Helen and her crew had actually burnt a couple of hundred DVDs in actual boxes. They'd photocopied the boxes.
Right.
And done that, and were prepared to give that away to everyone for free. Wow. At the event. I took a lot of material over with me, and Richard's been carrying 40, 50 kilos of oversized baggage with him around the world, which cost him a fortune, you know.
Extraordinary.
Anyway, it's unbelievable he's prepared to do that, but that's what he's been doing as well, just so we can make sure that people get educated, because obviously we don't care about making money. You know, the two have lost many, many, many thousand dollars. Mind you, the event...
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that, because the thing that I always get, now that it's actually hitting a bit more mainstream and the success of this tour, I had a comment on Facebook saying, oh, look, they're just $60, they're just out to make money. What a joke, you know, it's just there to make money. And you know, what do you say to that, John?
Well, I'd say every single person that came to work, including the film crew, every crew that attended the event got a free ticket. I mean, that was yourselves included, obviously. So basically, the Sydney event, there was only about 100 people that paid to attend. So you times that, and a lot of them obviously were, some people got, I'm talking about full price, some people got discount price. So I think I ended up receiving about $12,000 in actual people that paid money to enter the event. A lot of people were given free tickets because they couldn't afford to come. A lot of free tickets were given away to people that we wanted to get there, and people won them on the radio.
Look, so what I can say, just let me give you a plug here, because the Sydney event was incredibly professionally organised, and we had the best, you know, TV crew, really good helpers, you know, really good people doing everything, lighting specialists. It was a really professional event, and the cost of that, in terms of, you know, tickets, really was quite minimal compared to what people pay for other.
Yeah, the venue with insurance was well over $8,000 just for the venue, and that was really cheap. They did us, you know, did us a really good deal. It's very expensive to have something in the heart of the city. Anyone that's tried to organise these things, we had well over $12,000 just in airfares. Well over. We had a massive, obviously, amount of cost in the filming equipment, which was about $5,000. You see, if you start adding these up and you start thinking about all the costs, and how about the advertising, the 10,000 flyers, A6 flyers, the thousands of posters, the advertising in the magazines and advertising in papers and everything else that we did, the money that people like Naomi spent putting out Newswires to be ignored, except for one hit off WSFM, which cost $600. You know, like, I could just go on and on and on. If you were putting this at a conference on, that conference tour, and you're doing it with speakers you're actually paying, the only person that actually received any payment for any of the speaking engagements is Richard Gage. He gets a $500 fee so that he can stay alive and keep eating, because he's doing this for free. You know, and I think that's great. I'm happy to give him $500 to speak. I think you get good value on that.
Look, it's a token amount. I mean, it's a peppercorn amount.
It's just to keep it ticking over. So if you actually look at the cost, I think I ended up at about $50,000 for the tour. Luckily enough, we got about $11,000 back in sponsorship. You know, we got about $12,000 or so in ticket sales. Then we got a lot of donations at the Brisbane and Melbourne events, you know, up for about $1,000 in donations, which was great. We received, obviously, a lot of support. You know, people like yourself, Herowood, and Josh have given your time and energy to help web help, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I only paid about $1,200 all up for the website, the hardevidence.com, which you know is Chinese rates. So obviously, Sasha did an excellent job with that, and I was more than happy to make sure he could eat while he was doing that work. You know, and then we had lots of other costs. I mean, you could just from power transformers for the international speakers, you know, to little bits and pieces, wiring. You know, I paid Andy the light fellow. I decided to pay him and his assistant because he was covered by insurance then to do the dangerous work on the ladders setting up the light. So I paid him like a token amount so that, you know, he would be employed. At least that way he'd be covered by his own insurance.
And this is all coming out of grassroots money and out of your pocket alone, John. And this is where I really want to congratulate.
Well, I was lucky on overtime, you know. I did it on overtime. So really my employer, you know, has helped me out there a bit.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, this is how much we as a movement care and how much you care. And that's why, folks, every person that you tell, you might wake up another John Bursell. You might wake up another Harewood Fenton, someone that really puts time and effort every day into truth and into seeking, truth for the wider community. So nothing's wasted. And look, I mean, the amount of joy that you've, John, have got out of this and how much joy and information you've given out, I think it all makes it worthwhile, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, just the fact that, you know, we've got out 170 T-shirts people are wearing out there now with Investigate 9/11 written on it. You know, how good is that? You know, that's just as an achievement on the side with the tour. The fact that we've got, I received an email today from another doctor from Sydney University that attended the conference who works for Channel 9 occasionally. I won't mention his name. But he's writing off to Kim Hill. It was the most I got such a laugh. He was saying how much joy. I got so much joy today to read this email he'd sent to Kim Hill saying that he wanted to cite her interview as during his lectures and his books as an example of her psychological inability, that she was basically in denial, unable to address empirical evidence.
Yeah, that's great. Can you just clarify?
I just thought that was great. I got a doctor from Sydney University that's a specialist in the way the brain works, you know, questioning Kim Hill and asking to cite her as an example of cognitive dissonance, basically,
folks,
how great's that, you know?
Oh, that is fantastic. And folks, if you haven't heard this interview, I'm sure we can put it in the show notes. But
yeah, we'll definitely
really
put a link to it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it really is amazing. This very well, this veteran journalist, if you want to call her that, is literally throwing the most ridiculous questions at Gage. First, these are the sort of tricks they use. First, she keeps swapping topics really quickly. So you're like, one day, one question she's talking about Building 7, and then thinks she's talking about Building 7, she's actually talking about the Twin Towers, and she sort of throws around Richard Gage like there's no tomorrow. He doesn't quite know what she's talking about because, A, she hasn't done her research properly. And I've noticed this with another interview that she did. She really doesn't research before she does interviews, and it's obscene. But let's look at the psychological side of it. She starts throwing at him things like, are you into any other conspiracies? Or just keeps on sort of, how big does this thing have to be? And instead of looking at the empirical evidence, which he's laying out for her. I mean, this guy is a professional. He's not a tinfoil hat-wearing geek. He's really put his whole career on his line. He's put his marriage on the line. He's put his whole life on the line.
She was trying as hard as she could to put Richard in the position of conspiracy theorist. And she continually tried to bait him to go down that path. And he tried as hard as he could not to. A couple of times he kind of had to because she was dragging him along, right? And she was kind of forcing him to speculate about a few things. And then, of course, as soon as he started doing that, she then used that as a kind of a wedge against him. It was quite clear that she was practiced in this. You don't learn to do that. That technique is something that you learn to do from practice.
I can sort of see what you're getting at. I listened to the interview today. I didn't take it quite as badly as some, maybe because I've I don't know, maybe I was sort of expecting something like it, but it is possible. I know you might find this difficult to believe, because I've talked to quite a few people from the left of politics that really think that they know what's going on, and they've said those sort of things, nearly exactly the same sort of things to me in the street. So,
She was quoting from Counterpunch quite a lot, so she obviously...
She kept pushing that Counterpunch article talking about that independent single expert, but The thing that really annoyed me about the interview was that she didn't once concede one piece of evidence that Richard presented, but she failed to refute any of it. So really, you know, by her silence on all the evidence that Richard was talking about, the nanothermite, the free-fall collapse, the molten iron, all the other things that he kept slipping into the debate all the time, and I think he got all the ideas out there. So if there are any architects and engineers out there, they would have been saying, oh, I didn't know about that, or I didn't know about this, and that would have made their interest. And we saw that there was about 50 people in the audience that came to that event directly from the Kim Hill interview. So she really did fail in what she was doing. But Richard also, talking to Richard after the interview and after the event on the Saturday night at this absolutely excellent after party we had with about 30 people, I think I told you, Herowood, that the people there, I'm going, wow, these people are all really smart. They're artists, they're musicians, they're journalists. Like the caliber of the person at this dinner we had, like, it was just unbelievable. Like, you know, when we first started out in this campaign, I'm sorry if I upset anyone, but we had quite a few people that are a little bit out there, you know, that maybe didn't wash too often, and a few people that maybe had some pretty weird ideas on some things. Well, I tell you, things are changing, and the academics and the real thinking people now realise, because of people like Richard Gage and events like the Hard Evidence Tour Down Under, where there is just a good, hard facts backed up by good psychology looking at how we get the word out, people now have the confidence and they have the steel in their backs, because they can see that they've got something that's representing something that makes sense. They can see they've got people that have got clear minds and, you know, can really understand what's important. And it just blew me away. But anyway, talking to Richard about the Kim Hill interview, he realises now that things like the early warning from BBC, you know, that could have, you know, if I'm being really critical, I could think to myself, well, we know the firefighters were talking about the building coming down early. We know that other people were talking about it too, because someone had planned to blow up the building, hadn't they? We know that. But taking the angle that the BBC was scripted by someone in the CIA, that's a conspiracy theory.
Well,
right?
Can I just clarify something for the listeners?
Let me finish that. Kim made some points that hurt him a little bit in that, and that's what we've got to be careful of. We've just got to get right away from any of that conjecture. Just stick to the facts.
Can I just clarify for the listeners? The BBC reporting of Building 7 going down, is that actually in the Architect's Blueprint for Truth DVD?
It is. Well, he mentions it in his talk, yes.
So it's actually in the DVD that's been
And Richard
out.
Actually says that it was scripted. Like, you know, it's sort of, and it's a light point. It's meant to be a little bit humorous, which is cool. But Kim Hill is using that against him, see? And that's what she actually said to Richard. She mentions it on air, but she said off air, that's what she actually stopped watching. That gave her an excuse to stop watching his video.
Yeah, I mean, she brought that up as a point. So she'd clearly... she'd watched the Blueprint for Truth DVD, and then she brought that up as a point to use against Richard. Now, I tend to agree with you that the BBC issue, although it's fascinating and it's a great talking point when you're with, you know, relaxed company, right?
Yeah.
I think in some ways it's not a good thing to put on a disc that you want to have as primary evidence. I think that it probably would be better not to include that, although, you know, it's a tough call, because it is important in one regard only, that it contributes to evidence of foreknowledge. But it depends on how you interpret it. It's either foreknowledge or, as they all like to say, it was a mistake.
It was a mistake.
You know.
That's right, and the thing is, we know that the firefighters and other people were saying, the police were saying, you know, they were cordoning off the area, getting ready for the building to come down. Now, that obviously, you know, that makes sense to me. That's where the story came from, because there would have been a news reporter on the street that was getting information back. And as we know, there were explosions prior to the collapse of 7. So they could have heard an explosion and they thought, oh, well, it must have come down, so I'll report it. Who knows? We don't know. But, like, once you start saying it's a script, then that plays into the idea that we're crazy conspiracy theorists, even though that's definitely a possibility. And did you notice that she also kept bringing up the Pentagon?
Yeah, she really wanted Richard to go down that track, and
he stayed away from it. I've been talking to him about it a lot, and the more and more, as I keep telling people, we look into the Pentagon, the less and less we know. And so, yeah. You know, it's a very dangerous subject, and I think Richard knows that now. You can tell by the way he put forward the case that he didn't really want to go there. He's not looked at it.
Look, I'm just going to take a really quick program promo break here, and we'll be right back, folks.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Okay, we're back with Truth News Radio Australia, and we're talking tonight to John Bursell, who's just returned from an incredible 9/11 Truth tour, incorporating four major cities in Australia and New Zealand. And we've been going through some of the highlights of that tour. And just getting back to this question of, the way in which the Kim Hill interview was conducted and the way in which Richard responded to it. I think, obviously it was a tough interview, and it was always going to be hard. No matter how well prepared Richard was, it was always going to be hard. And, what I admire was just how he kept his cool the whole way through, because that's the hardest thing to do.
He did, and I told you that he was getting told, and the people in New Zealand were getting told, Helen was getting told, that Kim was on their side. That's what they were getting told. And so that, you said that she might have been put up to something, and the way she was approaching it, was looked as if she'd been set out to attack him. That sort of adds a little bit of weight to that argument. And I think a few of the things that you mentioned, Hera, now that I look at it and I'm thinking about it sort of the whole picture, that definitely could have been the case. She was telling us, that she was on our side, or a producer was saying that. She started off reasonably well. They gave him a good blurb at the site, didn't say anything too bad. But then when it got down to it, she kept pushing on the issues that have done us the most damage, the grey issues, the ones that are uncertain, the ones that are open to the most speculation, which would lend to the argument that, she was out to do damage. So, maybe you're right there. I'm not sure.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't go there. And it's really important, just like Richard Gage, we were talking about, falling down arguments of making us look like conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Theorists. It's really not good to say, oh, she's trying to do this. I think she's just, trying to stir controversy. At the end of the day, I think these newscasts really understand that people are extremely passionate, and I think they know the numbers behind 9/11 Truth now. So if they stir up some controversy, they'll get heaps of hits on their websites, because there's literally millions of people now from all around the world will swamp if they're if the news gets out through the Twitters and through the Facebooks, hey, listen to this ridiculous Kim Hill. She'll get swamped, and people will listen to it and spread the news, and it's basically a big advertising campaign. So I don't think it's that sinister sort of thing. It's more of a marketing exercise, or it might just be her personal view on things, because she might be this sort of typical left.
Well, that's the way I took it. The way I feel about it is that she's just having a lot of personal problems with dealing with it, because she's a journalist, been reporting this garbage about Al-Qaeda and the war on terror for 8 years now.
Yeah.
And it's pretty bloody embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah.
To disagree with you on that point. I mean, basically, my study of the way the media works suggests that, my approach to this is I approach this head on, mm-hmm. because I don't want to be caught out by being one of those guys that says I'm going to play fair, and I put my boxing gloves on, when the guy, the person I'm interacting with is going to pull out a gun and shoot me. I'm just trying to give you an analogy, right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Basically, when you're dealing with people who play dirty, I don't myself. But this is all about, strategy. It's more about strategy than anything else, right? But when
it's not strategic to say she was a plant.
Oh,
is it?
It's not strategic to say that in that context. However, there are all kinds of ways you can point out that someone has. Think of the cash for comment controversy that happened in Sydney, where major radio presenters were actually taking money to express a point of view. That's not a conspiracy theory. That actually happened, right?
Mm. Yep.
So we don't have to sort of be all, you know, oh, we shouldn't talk about that because that's a conspiracy theory. You see, that's falling into their meme. That's falling into their mindset where they make you afraid.
It was Australia's Mockingbird. Right?
Yeah, well, they make you afraid to have a strong point of view because they've created this meme of the conspiracy theory. And anything you say to criticize them, they go, conspiracy theory. And you go, oh, my God, I better not say that. You know what I mean?
Harold, I totally agree with you, and I'm absolutely ashamed of her, of Kim. You know, I wrote this in an email to her. That was, you know, her email's there in public domain, and I just said, look, I'm totally ashamed of how you treated Mr. Gage in your interview. You obviously have got big issues with trying to deal with this with yourself, but why don't you actually ask proper questions? I mean, this gentleman here is a professional. He's not some teenager. He's telling you amazing information and you're just sort of writing it off and asking ridiculous questions, and it was so unprofessional it made me really want to turn you off.
Excellent.
You know, and I basically said, look, if your family got murdered, oh, no, I didn't say your family. I said, if a murder happened, would you just be happy with, you know, Counterpunch investigating it, would you? Oh, that's enough. We don't need the police to investigate it anymore. We'll just have some guy at Counterpunch website. That's fine. I mean, and that's where I said, shame on you. I'm very, very disappointed in your news organisation and in you.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Now, I do agree. The Herald, you sort of said you come out fighting. I think Richard said to me that he was, you know, he was a little bit shocked because he didn't think the interview was, you know, when they were brought in, it was all very nicely, right?
Indeed.
And then it sort of developed, as you could see. It was pretty crazy for the first 20 minutes or so, and then she really went on the attack. Now, one of the things she kept pushing, you know, we know that she pushed, she talked about the no planes, right? She talked about the Pentagon. These issues just keep seem to be reoccurring, don't they?
Yeah, she tried to bring up the no planes. She tried to inject
that. You've got to think about all the things that I've sort of been speaking out against. I've got a lot of heat for the no planes, the Pentagon, being careful with the Pentagon, and also, you know, trying to stick to the really hard facts. You know, and she also kept bringing up this, how did, maybe Richard could have handled this one a little bit better, and I think he probably will. He probably learned a lot from that interview because it was a very cunning interview from Hill, even though she ended up coming across really sounding quite nasty. You know, I think most people got the feeling that she didn't care about the truth. You know, she was just pursuing her own little agenda, whatever it might be. But this idea of how, you know, why wouldn't someone come forward? Now, first of all, if you're going to be picked by, you know, whoever it might be, say it's the CIA, it's probably the most likely people to be organising this sort of thing. Say
what
with them, are they going to pick you to work on this job if they don't think they can sort you out if you step out of line? No way, you know. And are you going to fess up to the greatest murder in history? You know, like, why do people keep thinking that there's going to be someone that laid the charges that's going to step forward? Like, you know. That's just a ridiculous question, but these journalists keep asking it. And the thing is that someone like Jesse Ventura, do you remember the few interviews he did? He just completely smashed these journalists up. He just kept throwing it back at them. Oh, why don't you know that? Why haven't you checked this source? Why haven't you looked into that? You know, that aren't you interested? Doesn't that concern you? Like, he just kept throwing it back at the journalists.
Everyone has a different style. Jesse Ventura is a fighter, okay?
He is.
Richard Gage isn't. He's a lovely man. I totally respect what he did. I've got no problem with it. It's just that everyone's different.
Very successful, yeah.
Everyone's different. Everyone comes at this with the best they can do, the best approach they can do. Richard should continue what he's doing. Other people, like Jesse Ventura, and, you know, it'd be great if we got someone like John Pilger on board, because, you know, some of these people really do know how to cut and thrust, you know? And we need that as well. But we need more.
Yeah, John Pilger really cut her down in an interview he did with her prior to the Iraq War. He sort of told her that she's wasting his time by not doing research before interviewing him, and this is all live on TV. So, you know, she's kind of renowned for this sort of ridiculous form of so-called journalism when really it's just really quite idiotic.
And look, folks, we've got to continue on this show, because we are actually the alternative media. We are, you know, ultimately what we're doing may end up replacing what's in the mainstream media.
Well, I think the mainstream media is alternative media now. I mean, honestly, Harold, Channel 9 will jump for joy when they get 1.3 million views or hits on a on a sports game or a new or a movie, right? 1 point is the highest they can get, and they'll be loving it, right? Now, if you look at YouTube, they'll easily get 24 million hits on some video, and it's done within minutes. It's crazy. It is crazy. So the real media, and I've actually stopped calling them the mainstream media. I'm just calling them the corporate media from now on, because this sort of language, they want us to use this sort of language to sort of claim that stake. Like, oh yeah, no, we're the mainstream. We're the mainstream. Bull, they're the mainstream. They're not the mainstream anymore. Yeah. The mainstream is the internet.
That's an extremely, really, really great point. Yeah, and you know, let's keep that up. Let's not call them the mainstream media anymore. And listeners out there, why not? Why don't we just make this a new meme? Why don't we just get our heads into a new space and basically understand that this is the mainstream media now?
Yeah,
the internet, YouTube, blog portals, podcasts. Massive numbers of people, millions of people are listening to this stuff.
Absolutely millions. It dwarfs the so-called the corporate media. It dwarfs them. See, I'm starting to do it now. I'm starting to, you know, not call them mainstream anymore.
Indeed. And look, just you know, on the question of our media and the unique things that we are able to do, just want to point out to our listeners. If you're on our mailing list, you would have had the email about the interview with Jan Utzon, which we conducted at the Sydney Opera House. But I mean, that's a scoop, really, that we've done. And
and it was off the back of some really good work that yourself and others had done, Harrowood, running up to the Hard Evidence Tour. But then when you get, this is what's so important about these conference tours. I mean, I had a lot of people say to me, oh, it's so much money, and like, you know, you're only going to be speaking to the converted, and blah, is it really worth it, you know, and blah, blah. But something happens when you get people together. And the fact that we had Richard Gage here, and we had a conference here, and we had all those great people in one place at one time, it had an effect. Like, down at the ABC rally we did before, like the fact that, you know, we've got a Richard Gage standing there next to our banner, and we're calling out the ABC. And then I get a phone call from Dr. David Leifer. I'm coming down to the rally from Sydney Uni, you know, the doctor, the facilities manager there for the architecture faculty, walking down, you know, with Richard Gage, and then we've got a medical doctor there, Andrew Kildaris, and we've got all these other, you know, great people and activists and community radio hosts, and it's just like it just fueled this thing, you know, that happened. And really, I think the culmination of that was the event in Wellington. It's just, that's the biggest event that Richard Gage has ever spoken at, and it's in a small city, a city of only maybe 500,000 people, and they drew out, what, 1,000? Wow. Like, you know, what's it, how difficult that is? What does that equate to in Sydney? That equates to an event of 4,000 or 5,000 people. That's the sort of event we could put on if we could get it out in the mainstream. You know, that's the reality. We could fill the biggest room in the whole of Sydney, no problem, if we got one or two mainstream ads or mainstream, you know, media, pieces of media out there. We could fill the biggest room in Sydney. You know, what other issue could do that?
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Truly amazing.
So we can't give up. We've got to be really confident that it's, what I keep saying this, 9/11 truth is everywhere, and it's like 1 degree of separation from everything. We've got Jan Utzon talking to Richard Gage, and then I'm talking to John Pilger, telling him about Jan Utzon being a member of Architects and Engineers and giving him a book from David A. Griffin, who I got an email from today. And, you know, it's all connecting, it's all coming together, all the seeds that we've laid over the last 4 or 5 years that we've, you know, put up with all that ridicule and harassment, and we've spent all that money on those, it's paying off now. We've got to keep at it, we've got to keep going.
Yeah, we've got to double our efforts, folks. This is where you double the effort. This is where you triple the effort. You go harder than you've ever gone before, because right now people are susceptible, people are open, and enough time has endured that people can start looking at the alternatives. Their brain starts becoming a bit more malleable to understanding what the truth is, instead of these ridiculous lies that have all been taught to us. I mean, you know, let's just talk about Jan Utzon. For the folks that don't know who Jan Utzon is, he is the son of the original architect for the Sydney Opera House. He is the current architect for the Opera House. He's world-renowned. He's done some amazing projects of his own. Absolutely stunning, stunning guy, prolific architect. And, you know, he's signed the petition for AE 9/11 Truth, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, about a year ago, and so we went down there. Richard Gage interviewed him. We got a That's right. We got him on tape, and we've stuck that up on YouTube. It's already within an hour. It hadn't even converted the YouTube clip to the HD one yet. It was still low quality because YouTube, when you upload a HD clip, it does the low quality first, pumps that up. It instantly had like 400 hits on the thing while it hadn't even finished processing the HD quality one yet. And by, you know, within 24 hours was up to 4,000 hits. Again, we're the mainstream media now. And so, you know, this information's getting out there, and that is just, you know, he was really he wanted a new investigation. He's called for one. You know, this isn't just kids at home in their basement that have got nothing. I mean, this is one thing that silly journo brought up. She said to Richard Gage, "Oh, don't you think that 9/11 Truth or Truthers is just like?" And she read some ridiculous quote about, why people turn to conspiracy theories. It's like a what was it, the little creature, a chipmunk or something.
A squirrel about the cunt, yeah, can't get it some nuts, so they just start ripping at the tree or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And,
I remember
and
that.
Richard Gage just sort of says, well, I'm not going to even answer that ridiculous comment. I mean, just comparing, you know, people who are actually looking at hard evidence, thousands of, physicists, architects, engineers, aircraft engineers, like, you know, amazing amounts of people who are really looking at the hard evidence, to squirrels chomping at trees. Like, it was just obscene. And you know what? I think
in a way, like, we are sort of squirrels chomping at the system, and I'll tell you what, if they don't smarten up and get their shit together, we're going to pull the whole system down, because we need to get these these corporate media people to get on board, because, we don't want to destroy everything, but I tell you, they're going to be completely limp and flaccid and completely unimportant soon, the way they're going. If that's what they want to be, then they can be that, but they need to make a decision soon to start
these people are propagandists.
The truth.
These people, like Kim Hill and George Monbiot, and dozens of others that we've come across,
and everyone in the ABC, basically,
they are propagandists. I mean, call a spade a spade. And I've seen it with Kim Hill when she was interviewing John Pilger. So it's nothing new, right? She was pushing the neocon line on the invasion of Iraq. Why? Because these people are controlled. The media is controlled. It's corrupt. They have corrupt relationships. There's benefits and payback for basically selling out to the dominant, propaganda lines. And I do believe that the ones that go along with it get certain promotions, and the ones that don't go along with it don't get the promotions. I don't know how deep the corruption is. I don't know what other incentives or, at the higher levels, maybe there's cash involved. Who knows? We should investigate it, though, because the corruption in the media has to be exposed.
I just want to define propaganda, because it's thrown around left, right, and center, and I really want to really get people to understand what it is. So, propaganda, according to the dictionary, and this is from reference.com, is information, ideas, or rumors deliberately spread widely to help or harm a person, group, movement, institute, nation, etc. 2, the deliberate spreading of such information to prop up ideals and ideologies. This is the sorts of thing. But they also, what's part of propaganda is leaving out real information, so only or leaving out certain truths, so only explaining one part of something but leaving out something that actually counters whatever it is. So that's what propaganda is, and we see it exactly the woman that interviewed Richard Gage did. She was only going after, she'd never once actually talked about the stuff that Richard Gage was bringing up. She only mentioned ridiculous things.
That's true.
Even when Richard would bring it up, she would ignore that. She would ignore the facts and go, and that is the meaning of propaganda.
That's fascinating. Look, we're just going to take a little break at this point, and we'll have some music, and then we'll come back. And I want to, in the second part, get into the latest climate change news, because that's pretty important, and our listeners need to be updated on that. So just stand by, and we'll be right back after some music. This is Bob Marley singing Redemption Song.
Sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. All I ever have, redemption songs. These songs of freedom, songs of freedom.
Sick of the lies, deception, spin and half-truths? Well, so are we. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tune in every week at truthnews.com.au or subscribe to the podcast with iTunes or your favourite podcatcher.
Okay, we are back. John had to leave us there. it was a really great roundup of all that info. And of course, there's going to be much more to talk about. We're going to keep talking about various aspects of the Heart Evidence Conference. And
hey, that was honestly, I am so stoked right now. Just seeing the true parting of this nonsense, ridiculous story that the official story is, and the coming out, I guess, because we all know that so many people understand that 9/11 was an inside job, but no one's ever come out of the closet, if to put it, lack of, you know, looking for a better word than that. But it's kind of, you know, it's the first time where we're seeing all these academics stepping into the light, ready to get shot down, but only to be, you know, protected by more academics and more professionals all around us. And yeah. it's just amazing. It is really one of the best Christmas present I could have had this year, for sure.
And, you know, if you listen to that Kim Hill interview and just turn off your, just switch off your anger and resentment and just listen to it, it's actually quite interesting.
It's sad.
But I actually think there's some interesting substantive material in it that we should listen to and think about. You know what I mean? Okay, here's an example. When we talk about, and as Richard Gage says, the physical facts of the collapse that are known must inexorably lead you to the conclusion that there was explosives put there to bring those buildings down. Mm. However, the actual step-by-step way in which that was done, he doesn't know, we don't know. And yeah. He even admits it himself, it's very perplexing and very puzzling and upsetting, because we don't know how they did it, and we don't have a whistleblower who's come out and explained how they did it. And it's very frustrating. But the physical facts are undeniable, and that's the crux of it. That's where this whole movement gets, you know, its teeth into stuff, is that we're looking at the physical facts, and we can't deny the physical facts. We can't just, and this is what the problem is with the propagandists, we'll just deny the physical facts. I'll just ignore it. Oh, we won't look at it. Oh, we won't look at the free fall collapse of Building 7. I'll just turn my eyes away because it's too hard to explain it.
and it's ridiculous. Nobody needs to know how they did it. It doesn't matter.
Well, ultimately we do. We want it all explained. We want it all in court. We want it. We want to find out who did it and all the people who did it.
But what I'm saying is, it doesn't matter in terms of needing a new investigation to find that out. Yeah. What matters is that there is there's so much smoking gun going on that we, you know, that's what you need to look at. Not how did they do it, because we don't know. We don't know. Yeah. What we do know is that there is traces of thermite, billions of these microspheres, physical, ridiculous physical feats against any sort of, you know, laws of physics. And in any court of law, they would sit there presenting these facts.
But you know what I reckon, Josh? You know why I think people turn their eyes and don't want to know about it? Is because by acknowledging it and by looking at it head on, you're forced to be conscious of the fact that these bloodthirsty, murderous people were able to perform this act on office workers, you know. I mean, basically people who work in offices in tall buildings. And the irony of that is that these bloodthirsty acts are actually being conducted and have been conducted for decades on you know, peasants and, you know, goat herders in remote countries. And that we're sort of used to, we call that, you know, collateral damage or the fog of war oh, some goat herders got killed, party got killed. Oh, sad, you know.
Yeah.
But
they're in that theatre, you know, so that's just their, that's just part of it, you know.
Yes, they're in the theatre of war, yes.
But, you know, the thing is, and a speaker brought, I can't remember if it was Cosmos or if it was Luke Radowski, but a speaker brought this fantastic point up, and this is a really good way of attacking this argument that why would the American, you know, whoever did this couldn't, wouldn't do this to their own American people. Now, Let's look at the dust. And this is why the dust and the people dying right now and the first responders is so important. Because the government knew how much that these buildings were full of asbestos, of mercury and all sorts of other stuff. And they told people that it was safe to breathe, that the air was safe to breathe, to go back to work only days after the collapse.
Yeah, well, now, that sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it? Wow,
now,
you know.
Now, they told them that so fast so that they could get Wall Street back up and running. So they could get Wall Street back up and running and making money and
oh,
training.
Oh, Josh, I've got a big red button on my console here. Conspiracy theory, ding.
Ding.
Oh, you better quick, shut up now because... out. Because you're making a conspiracy theory.
But the fact of the matter is, they told people to get back and to start making money with an open, reopen Wall Street. The air is safe to breathe, quote.
Yeah.
Now, you know, more people have died than the actual Twin Towers falling and are dying right now and are suffering greatly from the dust that they breathed after being told that the air is safe to breathe, so head back in there. So, what does this tell you? This tells you that these people care more about opening Wall Street and starting to trade again than they do the people working there, the office workers, the firefighters, the rescue workers, the maids, the teachers, the helpers, the cooks, the firemen. They really do. And that was such a really important point because I've always
felt sorry
for all
this. It shows that same callous indifference to human life, yeah.
Yeah, it's this indifference. It's this, my God, we need Wall Street back open. We need Wall Street back open. That's more important than the 4,000 people that are going to, or more, that are going to suffer from extraordinary, painful and life debilitating problems to do with their lungs.
And the people who went down to work on that rubble pile, a lot of them were volunteers. A lot of them were just motivated because it was such a disaster and they wanted to do something to help. And my God, look, it's just heartbreaking. It's just heartbreaking. You can't, you know, once you get into that level of looking at it, you just realize it's
they don't care,
very,
very they care about money and they care about power and they care about growth of an empire. Anyway.
Indeed.
We have a lot of other topics to cover,
yeah,
but I was just so proud of everyone. I must say that. And big shout out to everyone that made along and helped promote this. Big shout out to John Bursell, who's just such a power driver. Big shout out to you, Harold.
Thank you. And, shout out to you, Josh.
And
a shout out to Emily, who did that amazing camera work with the Utzon interview.
Yeah.
Amazing work. See, we didn't plan that to be an interview. It was really... just lucky that we were able to do it, that we found a space and that you had a camera, that Emily was there to film it. But that sort of luck is what happens when you have a team, you know, everyone contributing, doing their best. And then you get that golden moment. And I think that was a golden moment when we captured Utzon and Richard Gage together, because having them together was better than any other options. You know, I mean, basically having Gage do the interview makes it really... stand out.
Amazing.
So, yeah. Anyway, look. We'll just we'll move on.
So we've got this hackers expose climate brawl.
Yeah. Now we've got this up on our screens here now, and our listeners can just Google that, hackers expose climate brawl. It's on the front page of the Australian today. Right at the time that the emissions trading bill is set to go through the Senate, and there is an open rebellion within the Liberal Party. I mean, this is one of the most explosive moments in Australian political history. You can't compare it to anything else that's happened in the past. It's quite amazing. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know whether there's going to be a double dissolution trigger and a new election, or whether Malcolm Turnbull, who's the leader of the opposition, is going to force his people into line. But we've got top people like Tony Abbott now, who really has a very good shot at being the leader of the opposition. He's basically joined the Minchin camp. Nick Minchin was the one who started off completely opposing the emissions trading scheme. Mm. We've now got Tony Abbott joining the Minchin camp.
Awesome.
So there could be a leadership spill within the Liberal Party, or Turnbull could just force it all together, we'll know in a couple of weeks. We'll probably know by the end of next week.
Well, let's break it down.
So yeah, well, I mean, the story that we're covering here is, I mean, this has come to the fore in the Australian news, I think, because the climate change questions now are central to policy, central to our future.
Yeah.
So it's much harder for it to be brushed under the rug now. And this type of story here, and the story is about hackers exposing, basically pulling a whole lot of data off computers in one of the top climate research centres in the world. Now, this kind of story would often just be hidden in blogs and you'd never know about it. It's quite a sign of the times that that story, which I heard about on Saturday, right, through the back channels, you know, through the alternative media, as we like to call it, is now slammed onto the front page of The Australian. That's where we're at. This is now such an important issue. And yes, the hackers pulled all this data off. It's been confirmed. They haven't denied it. They've admitted it. And they've admitted that the emails are real. And I've even read an interview where they try to explain it, and the explanations are pretty pathetic, you know. I mean, there's a statement in there where they talk about hiding the decline.
Yeah. So folks, what's happened here is that there are literally, you know, real scientists, real people trying to find out what's happened to the climate. I mean, real scientists are really scared. I mean, we all should be. If the hypothesis of global warming is real, we should all be extremely worried. So there's a lot of people trying to work. I mean, and trying to work this out. Now, the emails, the research is coming back saying, well, hang on, we've been cooling for, you know, the last few years since 98. We've been, there's growth, there's more this and that, and all this sort of technical jargon. And it's not fitting in with the IPCC's little blueprint that they like. This little thing of, oh, no, that we are all the Earth is growing hotter and we're all to blame. So the gatekeeper scientists at the IPCC are saying in these emails, we will do anything in our power to stop this being published in the IPCC. We do not want it because it doesn't go with our final conclusion, which is man-made global warming is you know, human data to blame for global warming. So here we have a very, very clear and concise indication that there is compartmentalization using a gatekeeper. So not all scientists are a part of this big conspiracy. It's just basically we've got these gatekeepers saying, well, we're not going to publish that because it doesn't fit into the conclusion, which is so anti-science. Funny, this is the ultimate sin against science, is saying, no, the conclusion is this, so we can't publish that. And that is so explosive.
Well, that is politics. You know, that is the tribal kind of war of people trying to dominate and control. And
for me, it really showcases who set up the IPCC, because they obviously picked these certain gatekeepers for an agenda, because they want a certain outcome. So why do people want a certain outcome? Because there's an agenda to push. And what's the agenda that we've been seeing? What's the big solution that the IPCC is pushing? Is global carbon trading, global taxation, global infrastructure for carbon, global enforcement of this new law and taxation, enforcement, a global enforcement arm. Now, what is it means? Force. It means police. It means enforcement of the law. So I think this is one of the most extraordinary pieces of news to come out about global warming. And I think everyone should republish it on their Facebooks and all the rest.
Yeah, look, there are two really important websites in relation to all this. One of them is climateaudit.org. Actually, it's climateaudit.com. I've just lost the link. Sorry, what's up? There's two really important websites. One is whatsupwiththat.com, and the other one is climateaudit.org. And they're both run by really dedicated guys with a lot of technical knowledge, and they're quite technical websites, and they always get into all the graphs, and they always give you all the information. It's really, you know, it's really hardcore stuff, and they've just been relentlessly exposing fraud for years now. You know, that the last thing they exposed was the tree ring data, which was the basis of the famous hockey stick graph, and just a whole lot of completely controlled methods in which were basically taking data, but restricting the data to certain areas where they got tree ring data that they liked, and basically threw out the data from the tree ring data that they didn't like. You know, there's been all this argument about the graphs and the famous hockey stick graph, and the story which I might just recommend you have a look at is Mike's Nature Trick, which that's the headline of the story, and it's got a quote here from one of these emails, and I'll just read to you briefly. It says here, "I've just completed Mike's Nature Trick of adding in the real temps to each series for the last 20 years." i.e. from 1981 onwards, and from 1961 to hide the decline. Okay, now, as explained here on this website, the email is about a statement on the status of the global climate in 1999. And there's a graph here which shows the amazing hockey stick shape, and it actually goes back to the year 1000 AD. And it shows... it shows the temperature kind of like, you know, oscillating a little bit, going up, down, and then around about the mid, late 19th century, it starts to go up. And then 2000, by the year 2000, it's just shooting, skyrocketing up. And this is the basic graph that the IPCC used from about 2003 onwards to just terrify people, because it's a terrifying graph. I'll put it up on the show notes again just to remind everyone, because it is a terrifying graph. And if you looked at that and you accepted it, you would think we are in an emergency. And this idea that we're in an emergency drives the whole climate change industry. So, look, I've just got a call coming through here, Josh, so I might just put us on pause. It could be important. Just hang on there.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Okay, we're back there. We just had John dropped out earlier on the show, and he didn't realize we thought he'd hung up. Anyway, John had to go anyway, so that's fine. Look, are you still there, Josh?
Sure am.
Excellent, sure am. Excellent.
Look, so it's all coming out, isn't it, mate? Like, really, this hack, and then exposing these sort of emails between one another. I mean, it's amazing, because there are really people that and you know what I find amazing is that they'll easily talk about a conspiracy, you know, when it comes to this for some reason. I mean, the mainstream media will say things like, you know, from the skeptics, where was it here? I've lost it, but basically, are saying, yeah, you know, that there's some sort of I hear skeptics say the emails are evidence of a conspiracy by climate scientists to bully into submission colleagues who challenge the theory of man-made climate change.
Yes, indeed.
You know, that's from the Hackers Exposed Climate Brawl.
Look, they're using the conspiracy theory meme for all it's worth. They're just basically exploiting that, milking it whenever it's needed to basically discredit someone's point of view. You just call them a conspiracy theorist. It's
really strange, isn't it? I mean, all it means is that two or more people got together to try and do something against something.
I know.
You know, I mean, lawyers deal with conspiracies every day. And for some reason, when it comes to anything that might be political,
yeah.
Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, it's like if you have a different opinion about something to some group of people that want to consider themselves to be the main, you know, the main consensus, and they want you to be marginalized, they'll just say, oh, you had some conspiracy theory. It could be anything. It could be because the milk went off, you know, and it's like, oh, the milk. Well, the milk went off, and I only bought it yesterday. Oh, conspiracy theory, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, what's really sad? What's really sad is that there's really good meaning people in the green movement. There's really wonderful people who basically just love the earth, and they're a bit naive because they just chew up this mainstream media stuff, and they're really passionate. And their passion's getting wasted. And what will happen eventually is all the truth will come out that this is all just rubbish. They'll either, A, stick to the dogma and just keep pushing it until they're, you know, because the cognitive dissonance just can't let go. Or they'll get so sort of disillusioned with activism and all the passion that they'll never feel passion again towards something that's good for the earth. Because I mean, we all want good things for the earth. I'm going, you know, I've said it before in shows, I'm sorry to repeat it, but you know, I'm a greenie from way back. I don't want to deforest the earth. I don't want, you know, pollution. I don't want to breathe bad air. But I'm not going to go around saying a lie about something that's totally natural, warming up the earth. And now it's all coming out, and I'm really, you know, it's people like the extreme left and the extreme right. I mean, it's both sides sort of hiding the facts of both 9/11 and climate change and a lot of other issues.
It's interesting, speaking of conspiracy theories, the climate change lobby actually has a conspiracy theory of their own, that climate change skeptics are all funded by ExxonMobil.
Yeah, well, I can tell you right now.
That's a conspiracy theory that they push.
Yeah. and it's funny because Mobil is one to really do well out of a carbon trading scheme.
Oh, yeah, look, and I keep saying this to people over and over again. All the major corporations, the biggest corporations on Earth, are fully supportive of global warming and carbon trading. Because they've allied themselves with it, and that's the big problem. That's what we're up against. They have a massive amount of power and influence, and you know, the skeptics don't have nearly as much power as that. I know that all of the major companies, such as News Limited, you know, News Corp, Richard Branson's you know, businesses, the CNN. Oh, look, it just goes on and on. You know, Bill Gates and Microsoft. I mean, all these big technology companies, all these big news organizations are 100% behind the sort of climate change hysteria. You know, they're all going to benefit from it because they've all tied up deals with Alwa's, you know, various, you know, subsidiaries, and all of these so-called green businesses to basically invest in companies which are going to give them carbon credits.
And people don't really understand. People don't understand what carbon trading is. I was out to dinner with a few other people the other day, very, very smart people. Very smart people. Josh, can you just explain carbon trading? I don't get it. I don't get what it is. What is it?
Amazing,
and it really, you know, it is so perplexing. It's something, you know, it's like trying to explain the stock exchange to people, because the stock exchange is quite complex. It's, you know, it really isn't that easy. Now, what I just would like to add to your point there, Harold, is that the reason why ExxonMobil and all these companies actually really like the carbon trading deal is because they will be getting free carbon credits. They will be getting free cash. And carbon credits, it's not some, ooh, carbon credit, you can't do anything with that, it's kind of pointless. No, carbon credit is cash.
Yeah, yeah. And all of the major energy companies are demanding that they get all this all these free credits. Yeah.
And guess where that cash is coming from? From the taxpayer.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, from the taxpayer, and the taxpayer will pay at the Bowser as well.
Yeah, all these companies, all like Energy Australia and everything, they're all demanding that the blow is softened for them. You know, that they've got to be held up.
Yeah,
but where's that coming from? It's coming from us.
Yeah, and they can do mega insider trading, because what they do is they get this massive wad of cash in terms of carbon credits.
Yeah,
and then they can use that to speculate on this new market, on this new bubble that starts. And because they're a company that's on the inside of everything that's going on, they can easily make so much money for their shareholders by trading carbon credits.
Look, it's just corruption.
It's insider trading, and it's corruption, and it's disgusting.
This is corporatism. This is fascism.
Okay? It is fascism. It's corporatism. And you know what's really sad? Like I said again, these well-meaning greenies are lying on the ground, screaming and hurling blood all over themselves, and going, it's, you know, fake blood, and it's the end of this and that. And you think, man, what? You know what you're doing? You're playing right. You are the fodder of the new world order. The new world order, the concept of global government and massive power sort of control grids of power really love you right now, lying there and screaming about global warming. It's, you know, without one little bit of proper sort of investigative research into the issues here, you know, I find it so sad, because these people do mean really well.
So true. Look, I've got one more story to cover tonight. It's kind of a surprise.
Like a Christmas present?
Well, I haven't had a chance to explain it to you in advance, but I think it's quite interesting, and I want to play a video here I've got from Russia Today. So we'll kick into that shortly. Okay, in our final segment tonight, I want to talk about something that I discovered because it was on the radio a couple of days ago. It was on BBC, and it was actually on BBC Hard Talk program, which is an interview program where they have one-on-one interview, and you know, they're usually not that good. I don't like the BBC much. You know, I'm pretty negative about the BBC, but this was one of those rare cases where, wow, you know. The guy they interviewed, his name is Shlomo Sand.
Shlomo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a Jew. He's an Israeli. And he's a historian, a very highly respected academic historian.
And he runs at 50 frames a second. That's a joke for the slow-mo, you know.
Okay, yeah.
For the filmmakers out there.
Yeah. Well, look, I don't know about that. But this guy is proposed a theory, and apparently this has caused a storm of controversy in Israel, because he claims that the Jewish people are a complete invention, that there is essentially no such thing as the Jewish people, and what? That it is really a construct of Zionism. Right. That his argument, and it'll come across here when I play the actual interview, but basically, if you consider, like, Judaism is a religion, right, as is Christianity, right? Yeah. Now, there are Christians all over the world. There are Christians in Africa. There are Christians in South America. But they're all, you know, there's no such thing as, like, a Christian people. Like, do you get the point here? Like, you know, if you are live in Zimbabwe and you're a Christian, you're a Zimbabwean, right? But you also happen to be of the Christian religion. So,
I don't know. There's all these flavors. Like, I'm a Catholic, and the Catholic people belong in, you know.
No, that's a sub issue. I'm basically talking here about the question of the difference between having a religion of any kind, whether, I don't care whether it's Protestant, Presbyterian, Mormon, Scientologist, you know, doesn't matter. Mm. Mm. Basically, the difference between that and talking about a people, right? The concept that the Jewish state is based on is actually a racial theory.
Well, it's a very racist concept. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, it's actually
it's like saying white Australia.
Well, it's a racial theory, and the only thing it really has in common, apart from, like, apartheid South Africa, which is now totally discredited, right? The only other thing that comes close to it is actually Hitler's theories, because the Nazis had a racial theory.
Yeah.
Right. So what this guy is basically arguing is that the Jewish concept of a Jewish state and a Jewish race is actually buying into ideology, which is the most obnoxious ideology that we can look at in history and say, you know, it's totally wrong, totally evil.
So it's the differentiation between a race and a religion.
Yeah, well, I mean, a religion, anyone can, you know, a religion is a religion, okay?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But a race is a different construct and a different concept. And so what he's saying is that, you know, that there were Jews living in many different parts of Europe. There were Jews living in Africa. There were Jews, you know, living in all different parts of the world. There's nothing there to construe that there must then be a Jewish state where all the Jews come together and live in this one country.
There's a lot of Jews that are against Zionism. I mean, you see Jews against Zionism where they don't want a Jewish state because they think it's racist.
Yeah, and it's really important to hear.
And there's
this.
A lot of Zionists that aren't even Jewish.
Indeed. And it's really important to hear this coming from Jewish people themselves, because we only generally get the propaganda point of view of the Zionist Jews. And we think that's what Jews are. And then, of course, that then fuels anti-Semitic ideology, because everyone then identifies the extreme Zionist position with Jews generally. And that's why, you know, I really want to cover this, and we'll probably get back to it at some point. But I'll just play this news piece from Russia Today now, and then we can, you know, maybe have a little chat about it and talk about it again later.
Yeah. So
here we go.
With me I have Professor Shlomo Sand, author of a book that's making waves here in Israel, The Invention of the Jewish People. Professor, thank you very much for joining us here on RT. If we go to the heart of your book, what is the difference between a people, a race, and a religion?
I will start from the end, because, you know, before people existed in the world, I think religious communities were the most important union of people in the world. Religion is a community of people that believe in the same God. Race is something that was dominate the 19th century thought about human beings. And I think that today, after the Second World War, the word race become illegitimate at all. You know, we don't believe that race exists because people are so mixed between them that you cannot speak really of race, only about a yellow race, a black race, and a white race. About people, it's legitimate. We are using it all the time. And what is important, when we say French people, for example, Italian people, we are thinking not about a scientific concept of a group, a human group. We are thinking about a human group that have in common a language, have in common a culture, a secular culture, and have in common a lot of practice, but secular practice, okay? Before the modern times, people are living in villages that between a valley and the other valley, it was a different dialect of the language. Imagine a world that the peasant spoke maybe 300 words with all their life. I don't know how many words they spoke with their wife. But speaking about it as a people, it's something not really scientific.
Can you say there's such a thing as a Jewish people?
I cannot say a Jewish people. Why I cannot say a Jewish people? Because the common sense between a Jewish 500 years ago, between a Jew in Marrakesh, a Jew in London, and a Jew in Rome, was only religious practice and not secular practice. They didn't speak the same language, they didn't eat the same food, they didn't hear the same music. Why to call it a people, I ask?
Can we not go back further and say that the Jewish people started in biblical times?
I advise everybody to open the Bible and to see all the uses of the word people in the Bible. People in the Bible is not at all the same thing that I nominate people today. Not at all. The word people in the Bible, in the beginning of my book, I explain it very clearly, can be a village, can be the poor people in the country, can be an army, can be also a religious community.
So if the Jews are not a people, what are they?
In the past, it was one of the religious community, the most important religious community that started to spread monotheism. Without Judaism as a religion, there cannot be not Christianism and not Islam. The Jewish continue to exist as a kind of sect in the Christian world and after it in the Islamic world. But most of them has not the same origin. Most of them massively are converted to Judaism from the 200 before Jesus Christ till the 18th century, 19th century. Saying that there is not a Jewish people in the world, it doesn't mean that I deny the affinity between Jews, the solidarity between Jews. You have to understand, after Hitler, somebody that denies solidarity between Jews is an idiot or a criminal.
I'll just pause it there. Anyway, that gives you a flavor of this interview and this guy's ideas, and I'll put the whole thing up so we can look at it on Truth News. Now, it's a really interesting point, and I think it's really important to start to see through the myths around the constructions of a lot of the things that we've grown up and accepted, and just to see some of the false constructs that are put together, and you know, nationalism and the creation of states is basically created in people's minds by a whole series of things that are taught to them. Now, of course, this guy, of course, isn't saying that Jewish state should be destroyed. He actually believes the Jewish state should continue now because it exists. But he's basically trying to bring sense and science back in and take it just out of this sort of myth-making nonsense that has been clouding people's ability to think properly. And also, it gives the power mongers, the power elites, and the military aggressors ways of manipulating and controlling, and that's the real danger. You know, I mean, this guy advocates a two-state solution. He basically wants the Palestinians to have their own state and Jewish people to continue to have a state. But he's basically saying that you can't really have a state based on a racial concept. So because race is not a scientific I guess what he's saying is
it's ridiculous. Race is ridiculous right now. I mean, yeah. I don't know what I've got in me. I mean, I've probably got Jewish. I've probably got American Indian. I've probably got Jewish. See, there, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's not really even a race. But who knows what I've got? I've probably got. I know I've got Irish. I've got a whole heap of different stuff in me. There is no such thing as a single race anymore. And if you have, they're probably quite mongoloid. They've probably been retarded in some sort of way. Sorry, I shouldn't have said it that way. But
genetically
regressed, because by mixing race, it actually strengthens your gene pool, because certain pure races from years ago that might have been are more immune to a certain bug or disease in that part of the world, and so when that mix and the genetic memory holds on to these cures within a genetic cure within yourself or resistances, and so you build this this resistance to other things and in life. I mean, the more you breed outside of your circle, the better it is. So it really and right now with planes and transport around the world, there really is, you'll find it extraordinarily hard to find one person that his lineage goes all the way, or her lineage goes all the way back to being in the exact same area of the world, you know, all the way through. Maybe in the deepest parts of China you might find it, but...
Well, anyway, I find it quite encouraging and positive that this man is getting mainstream media exposure. I know we said we weren't going to use that phrase anymore, but it's a bit hard to...
corporate media exposure.
Yeah, corporate media exposure, thank you. I find it encouraging because he's talking sense, and basically this type of way of thinking is so much more logical and so much more clear. I mean, look, the State of Israel obviously exists, right? Now, basically, he's probably saying, well, don't dismantle it. But, I mean, it's based on a culture. I mean, it's not a race. It's not a race thing, okay? I mean, there's a culture there, okay? But, of course, you might be Muslim and live in Israel. You know, you might be Christian. You might be Jewish. Yeah. Because it's just a state. A state is just a, you know, it's a whole bunch of things about, well, it's a way of life, and it's people who live in a certain area. And there's going to be all kinds of things that...
it's a farm where... Yeah. If you can tax the masses that live in a certain geographical area.
Yeah. so the need to sort of create the identity of peoples, is my understanding, is used for ambitions of power and control that usually involve warfare. Which is something...
Resources and warfare.
Yeah, warfare and resource control. And it's just great to see this, you know, and I think this is the future. This is the way of the future when people can step up with a important, you know, academic and well-studied input. And I think that is how false paradigms can eventually go. You know, we're seeing the same thing with the climate change issues. You know, basically, when people can step up and they can show the immense, you know, alternative preference of a way of looking at the world, which is based on science, to some mythological, you know, belief systems, then it just it will win out. I do think it will win out. So
yeah, and folks, we all as a people want. We all have a certain preference in life, and the preference for most, 99.99% of people, is that we want peace among earthlings. Peace and love amongst each other as people, instead of hate and fear and loathing and war. And this sort of, you know, truth always heads towards an understanding of one another. It's lies and deception that bring open fear and war, and by, you know, really sort of understanding each other and understanding truths of words and meanings and memes and stuff, and you know, that's the type of thing that will bring us closer to a peaceful world.
So true. Thanks for that wrap up. And look, that particular story is one we're going to return to. And, you know, we've got so much to cover on this show. We're going to, you know, there's a whole lot more things I need to get back into, whole lot more topics we've touched briefly we're going to get back into.
I'd like to quickly thank all the listeners that came up to us at the conferences and said what a great show and that they listened. I mean, I was really blown away by the amazing amount of people. And I say, hey, you know, you got to comment more and stuff. So please comment. Let us know you're out there, and comment on iTunes. Give us some 5-star ratings on iTunes, and really, you know, post it on Facebook. These shows.
Yeah.
Any little bit of help to help spread our show will help us out. You don't need to fund us with money. You know, we're all doing this for free. You just need to fund us with a little bit of effort and time to help spread the show. That would be great.
Yeah, and retweet our tweets and, you know, just forward our, you know, our mail outs to anyone you know. And, yeah, contact us.
That's truthnews.com.au.
Yeah, truthnews.com.au. That's
and
where
the Twitter, reside. What's the Twitter?
It's Truth News Oz.
Yeah.
Great. Well, look. Well, thanks for your contributions tonight, Josh.
Thank you, Harold, and I'll see you next week, folks. And Harold, I'll see you next week too.
Looking forward to it. Okay. Good night.
Ciao.